From San Francisco, California, this is the Rock and Roll Geek Show.
This is the story of my rock and roll butler.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Geek Show. My name is Michael Butler. Thanks a lot for joining me. I really appreciate it. Today is Thursday, August 25th, 2022, and it is 6.07 p.m. when I'm recording this. This is day 25 of the Dog Days of Podcasting. We are in the final home stretch. Tomorrow morning, I'm getting on a plane and heading to Miami, Florida, and we're going to spend the night in Miami. We got a room in Miami somewhere in South Beach. Have not been to South Beach since I played there at the Cameo Theater in Stevie Stiletto. So it's been a long time. We got a hotel. We're going to spend the night there. We're going to get a rental car, and hopefully the flight will be on time, and we'll be having some Cuban food for dinner. So if anybody knows any good Cuban restaurants in Miami, in the Miami area, South Beach, send me an email, rockandrollgeek@gmail.com, or post it on the Rock and Roll Geek Facebook group and let me know, friends. And then Saturday morning, we're going to drive down to Little Pine Key and begin our 5 or 6 day adventure trying to get some lobster. I just got back from Korean barbecue with Brian, my son, and I'm in a food coma. Had a tall cask beer, a 22-ounce cask beer, and a lot of Korean barbecue. This place is real wooden charcoal. It's on Geary. It's called Wooden Charcoal Barbecue. They bring you a grill to your table and raw meat, and you throw that meat on the grill, and tons of kimchi and some tofu stew. I could pass out right now in a food coma. And I'm drunk, a little bit drunk, too, from drinking that tall cask beer by myself. But I'm going to open up, I guess technically this would be like the fourth or fifth beer of the day, this Tecate. I'm already slurring my words, so I apologize in advance. Let me take a sip of this fine Tecate. All right, I'm going to play 4 audio comments tonight because we don't have that much time left in the dog days, but you can keep the audio comments coming because I'll use them eventually, even if I don't. But I just want to be able to talk to everybody who left comments. So tomorrow, from here on to the rest of the dog days, audio comments, I have to just talk over the person because backpack, I'm going to be doing all the shows on my phone and you can't pause it in backpack. So let's take it from the top. Let's hear who this is.
Hey, Michael Butler. This is Kurt Crawford.
Kurt Crawford, one of the biggest supporters of the Rock and Roll Geek Show and has never called into the show. So, Kurt, I'm so happy to hear your voice, my friend.
Hey, Michael Butler. This is Kurt Crawford.
Yes.
First time, long time.
Long time, first time.
I hope you're doing well and couldn't be better.
Yes. Mega dildos.
I could be doing better as
really?
I'm finally getting over a bout with the Corova.
Oh.
Yep, after 2 vax shots, 2 vax boosters, it still finally got me.
4 shots, and he got COVID. Huh. I don't know what that tells you, but I'm glad you're doing okay now, Kurt.
My son got married near the end of July, and 4 days later, I received word that my new daughter-in-law and 2 bridesmaids had tested positive. I thought to myself, uh-oh, as my throat had been scratchy, which I chalked up to limited sleep in the days leading up to and after the ceremony.
I've said it before. The way to not get COVID is don't get tested, friends.
Anyway, I self-tested the next day, and bingo, it came back positive.
Good for you.
I had a week of fatigue followed by another week of residual cough, but I'm now getting back to normal. I apologize for my voice still not being 100%. But I figured I better get an audio comment to you before the dog days of podcasting are over.
Thank you, Kurt.
As this is my first attempt at a comment,
yes.
You can count on it being a train wreck.
Uh-huh.
And I've kind of been hesitant to do any audio comments, honestly, because I kind of afraid that Jonathan Travers listener might decide to comment on my audio comment, and he kind of scares me.
Jonathan Travers, that's a call out to you, friend. Comment on Kirk Crawford.
Jonathan, if you're listening, please go easy on me. It'd be good to hear from you. It's been a while, it seems like, and your comments are always really entertaining. Anyway, so, Michael, leading up to my son's wedding, I was flooded with memories as I was trying to come up with my father of the groom toast. Thus, I thought I might go nostalgic on you for this audio.
Yeah, I did the father of the bride toast, and that was quite stressful.
Since I've been stuck in overdrive, remembering details of my past experiences with my son, one memory I had was back when my son was around 9, he came out to the driveway to watch me wash our cars. Note I said watch, help.
Yeah, of course not.
I think he spent most of the next hour sitting on his skateboard. Anyway, I usually have music playing in the garage to pass the time, and he asked if I'd put on that Battery song. I was surprised that I didn't play that often. I wasn't aware I'd even heard it. So I slid the Master of Puppets CD into the player, and the opening song Battery began. And it was also a beginning of a heavy metal bonding between the two of us that continues to this day.
That's good.
Soon we
My daughter and I had a punk rock bonding because she was a huge Descendants fan, as was I. She heard my Descendants record and said, wow, that's really good. And then Descendants became her favorite band.
Became big fans of Metallica, which of course led us to exploring the whole thrash scene, Megadeth, Exodus, Testament, Heathen, Metal Church, Anthrax, etc. Before long, we both hoped to see a Metallica show. And I'd heard that if you join the Metallica fan club, that besides getting exclusive club t-shirt annually, which are probably the ugliest Metallica shirts out there, by the way, and a monthly glossy fan mag, you also got a shot at choice seat selections before the tickets went on sale to the public. So I felt ridiculous joining a fan club. I'd never been a member of one in my life. But since Metallica's was run by the band, and it's turned out to be a great decision, as we have gotten good seats.
I was a member of Air Force One, and in Air Force One, I got 2 8x10s. I got a patch and an Air Force One membership card, I think. I was also a member of the Kiss Army, too. Everybody was.
To every show we ever wanted to see. In July 2000, Metallica was coming to Southern California to headline what they called the inaugural Summer Sanitarium Tour, with stops scheduled at outdoor stadiums across the U.S. during the summer. It would be my son's first concert, so I thought an outdoor venue with reserved seats would be a good place for a 10-year-old burgeoning metalhead to start. Metallica was the headliner with Korn and Kid Rock as primary support, and also Powerman 5000, who's fronted by Rob Zombie's younger brother, and our relative newcomers that we weren't familiar with at the time, System of a Down.
Also, John Tempesta's younger brother played guitar in Powerman 5000.
The shebang. You know, my son, like many kids his age then, really liked Korn a lot, so that was actually a bonus. At an early stop in the East Coast on the tour, the MTV, back when they actually covered music, did an all-access program with some of their VJs hanging out and reporting behind the scenes and showing live clips of the performances from that show, which I think was like in Philadelphia or someplace like that. And it really got us psyched up for our show. But unexpectedly, James Hetfield reportedly had a jet ski accident on one of the tour off days and hurt his back. He was actually missing shows, and Metallica decided to press on with singers from the other bands stepping in. So we were stressing as we felt, geez, no Hetfield, that's no Metallica.
No Metallica.
But we're relieved to learn that Hetfield was back on stage at the show prior to ours and was a go for our show at the
historic Los Angeles Coliseum.
I say historic because this thing is built in the 1920s, and hosted an Olympics back in that era, and then also back in 1984, if you remember. And in 2000, it was really in a dire need of an upgrade. I mean, it was kind of a dump, to put it mildly. Capacity for football games was like 93,000 back then, so you get the picture. It can be a huge venue. But there's an open end of the oval called the peristyle, so think horseshoe shape. It gives the venue options for setting the stage. Moving the stage from the open end closer to the closed end reduces the seating. So for the show, the stage was moved up a bit, so I'd guess capacity for the show including a large open GA floor, was probably around 60,000 to 70,000.
That's still a lot of people.
And by the time Metallica took to the stage later that night, it was pretty full. Damn, so for those who aren't familiar with the Coliseum,
could you
imagine
being in a band that draws 60,000 people?
It's located in South Central Los Angeles, which in 2000 was considered to be a high crime area.
Uh-huh.
Think of the movie that came out in the 90s called Boys in the Hood. I remember way back when I was about 10, my dad took me to a Los Angeles Rams football game, and he cruised the neighborhood next to the Coliseum to find parking. A black dude flagged him down, and my dad had him started talking. And next thing I knew, he had my dad pull our car up over the curb and onto this fella's front lawn next to a couple other cars to park for a few bucks. Thinking back, it's pretty amazing the car was still there in one piece after the game. You may recall that comedy Vacation, where Chevy Chase drove his family.
Yes.
Kind of got lost in off the freeway, and next thing you know, he's talking to some dudes, and his car, they steal all the hubcaps and everything off his car. Well, anyway, of course, the car we were driving was nothing too special, a gold Chevy Impala with a black vinyl roof. Do you remember when there was a style for American cars, fake leather stubbled vinyl roofs fade and crack after
a
few years?
Yes, I do.
What fantastic American engineering.
My friend Mike Burns has a Mustang with that kind of roof, I think.
But I digress. Back to July 2000 and my son. My son and I found parking a few blocks away at the campus of University of Southern California. USC plays their football games at the Coliseum. It was probably like 3 p.m. when we parked, so broad daylight on a hot July day. We wandered over to the Coliseum with other fans and soon learned that there was only one gate that was designated to let Met Club members in. And we had to find that gate. So we started searching. Naturally, it was on the opposite side of the stadium where we were. And as I said, the Coliseum is huge. So, and with fans going everywhere, it was really slow going. So it took quite a while to get to the gate. Then there was a long line at the gate to enter. And as it happens, we hear System of a Down start their set. Damn. We get in the stadium only to discover that our seats are actually on the other side of the stadium.
Uh-huh.
So we kind of retrace our steps inside the stadium, back to where we almost eventually were. And with the crowd milling inside the stadium, we can only catch glimpses of System of a Down doing their set. We finally get to our really excellent reserve loge seats. Thank you, Met Club. To the left of the stage, the singer for System of a Down had a Middle Eastern looking military cap and sang in that high voice. Otherwise, we don't remember a thing about that set.
Yeah.
Next up was Paramount 5000 and Young Zombie, which I think his name is Spider One, stage name, was wearing a total leather suit and motorcycle goggles on his head as a headband, as if he had just stepped off the set of a Mad Max movie.
Yeah, stupid.
It was well into the 80s temperature-wise, and he had to be dying in that leather suit. But he led them through an energetic set of new industrial metal. The guy really worked hard. They had a couple of songs out then, Nobody's Real, I think, and When Worlds Collide, which were both well-received by the growing crowd. Certainly it was not full by any means at that point in time. At this point, we needed some food and water, so we ventured away from our seats. We got some sustenance, hit the bathrooms. Did I tell you how old the Coliseum is? Just imagine their bathrooms with 67,000 metal heads. Awful would be
troughs,
a generous description.
Right? Piss troughs.
We stopped at a merch tent where my 10-year-old selected a white Korn t-shirt with the Korn band members all drawn as if they were little rag dolls, about as unmetal looking a shirt as you could ever find at a show. The smallest size available was a medium, which was huge on him, so that when he put it on, it hung to his knees. It had the effect of making him look like he was even younger, like about 7 years old. By the way, while wandering around, I saw no kids anywhere near my son's age.
Huh.
We made it back to our seats just in time for the next act, Kid Rock. When the curtain dropped, I really began to question my judgment about bringing a 10-year-old to the show.
A lot of cussing.
At each side of the stage was a young woman in a bikini pole dancing inside of a cage. I kind of wished we didn't have such good seats.
Yeah.
Well, not really.
I bet the kid loved it.
Anyway, Kid Rock had quite a large band, and there was so much activity going on stage, it made you feel like you were at a carnival. Not really a Kid Rock fan, but he put us all into his show and definitely had the crowd going. He had a guy scratching and doing much of the back and forth singing with him. I think he had some solo releases. Uncle Cracker. Yeah. I think he was called something like that. And my son was Jack, that from our vantage point, we could see behind and to the side of the stage. And in the distance, we easily recognized Lars Ulrich trotting down some stairs from the open end of the stadium and come to the side of the stage to watch some of Kid Rock's show. We were entertained, and after a while, my son appeared to be focused on the band and no longer focusing on the go-go dancers. Next up would be Korn as dusk and a little more comfortable temperatures settling in. While we waited, a young woman walked down our row, so we had to stand up to let her go by. She was already really drunk,
and she
stopped and asked if we minded if she peed at our seats.
What?
Wow, I've never had that happen at any show now before.
Wait a minute. Excuse me, young man, 10-year-old boy. Would it be okay if I pulled my pants down and peed in my seat? What?
After this one, we told her no thanks and encouraged her to hustle off to the bathroom,
she'd
get away from us before peeing her pants or puking anywhere near us. Thankfully, we never saw her again. Finally, Korn took the stage and they really rocked the house. Really great set. Singer Jonathan Davis, he's wearing like a leather top, leather kilt, little purse-like thing that hangs in front of the kilt,
yeah,
and white knee socks. He kind of looked like a Scot, but with no trace of plaid. Uh-huh. All that leather, he had to be sweating his ass off. They had released their fourth album, Issues, the year before, so I had a nice body of work to select from. I do remember them playing Freak on a Leash, specifically Got the Life, which I think is a really good song of theirs. There were huge fireballs at the front of the stage that even in our seats off to the side and up a bit from the floor, it really felt like our faces were almost singed. Chutes and Ladders, frontman Davis playing bagpipes, believe it or not. Adidas, a big crowd favorite. Crowd of Korn, I had to say they killed it. We were feeling super entertained at this point. So by now it's getting pretty dark, meaning it must be after 8 o'clock. Figure another 30 to 40 minutes to break down Korn's gear and get the stage ready for Metallica, putting them on, say, at around 9 o'clock. We were anxious because in our minds we carried doubt about whether Hetfield was going to be able to play or play, you know, give it near 100% effort due to his injury. Unfortunately, 9 o'clock came and went, and still no Metallica. Huh. Conservatively, I'd say the crowd, you know, probably almost 70,000 by now, and they were baked by a day of sun, beer, and weed, and getting restless. Thus began the yelling in unison by drunk males at various points in the stadium, "Show us your tits," and many women began, surprisingly to me, to comply. My 10-year-old's head was swiveling from right to left, uh-huh, as of course this was another first.
That's
for
great.
Him. Some dudes behind us were busting my balls. Your kid shouldn't see that. Cover his eyes.
Yeah.
After a while, the crowd got bored, or women simply stopped pulling up their tops, so that nonsense ended. But still no Metallica, and many of the crowd were really getting downright testy at this point. All day, the concession stands had been selling a lemonade drink that included a whole squeezed lemon as garnish.
Wow.
With the July heat, they had sold thousands of these drinks in these tall plastic cups. So before long, some of the crowd, noticeably in the cheaper seats higher up in the oval-shaped stadium, picked up the squeezed lemons from their empty cups and started tossing them onto the crowd on the floor and lower levels. It started with one or two lemons a minute or so, but before long it was raining lemons. Then the people on the floor and lower levels tried to throw the now misshapen lemons.
You imagine what your kid was, what was going through your kid's mind. He's having the time of his life. This is like all new to him, and he's seeing tits, he's seeing flying lemons. The kid's having wanting to pee. He's having a great time.
Back up into the stands. So, from our lower seats in the stands, we had to literally take cover from airborne lemons coming from above and below. This went on way too long, but finally the lights down and the strains of the ecstasy of gold began, with the crowd going nuts and Metallica finally storming the stage, opening with Creeping Death. Later, I theorized the cause for the late start for Metallica was due to Hetfield's probably physical therapist needing extra time prior to the show to work on his injured back to get him ready to take the stage. This stemmed from a point later in the show when Hetfield announced he'd be stepping away from the stage for a few minutes so they can stretch out my back. My memory is hazy, but I think Jason then sang lead on a song, and maybe Kirk and Jason did their solo bass guitar solo section before Hetfield returned. I just don't really remember exactly. It's just too bad that they just didn't have Korn play two or three more songs from their vast catalog to fill the time if they knew they were going to be coming out late. Anyway, Hetfield was in fine form as far as we could tell, and Metallica put on their usual professional thrash fest. Their last studio effort from a couple years prior to the show was with the Garage Inc. album of covers
and
the live S&M show with the SF Symphony from 1999. So included in the set list were a new song introduced during the S&M show called No Leaf Clover, and a couple of covers from Garage Inc., including Bob Seger's Turn the Page. Oh, and they also had a song for a video, from a video for a Mission Impossible soundtrack that's called I Disappear, which they also performed. I thought it was funny when two dudes right behind us who'd been standing the entire Metallica set suddenly sat down and crossed their arms in a bit of a hissy fit when Metallica began the song from the soundtrack. I guess it was their way of protesting Metallica selling out and song for a movie. They did enough of the great songs from the first five albums to fully satisfy us, and honestly, after the first encore, my son was spent, no longer interested in standing, so he wasn't seeing their final songs with everything on their feet in front of him. But of course, we stayed to the end. After it was over, we began our long walk from our seats out of the Coliseum, and that's when things got a little stressful. Where were we? We had walked all the way around outside prior to entering, and then walked about halfway around to get to our seats once we were inside. That was many hours ago, and when it was daylight. Now it's near midnight and dark out. We start walking with the crowd, and I have to say, I was a little concerned as my wife can attest, I have a really poor sense of direction.
Me too, friend.
And of course, my son was of no help. But we got to a main street, and I recognized an auto dealership in the distance that I thought we had passed earlier in the day. So, throwing caution to the wind, I had us head towards it, and we got our bearings and soon arrived at our car in one piece. That was the beginning of many shows we've seen together. Often we'd be in line prior to a show, and young adults in line would ask me, "Hey, is that your son?" And they would say how cool it was that I would take him to a show and how they wished their dad had taken them to shows when they were in my son's age.
That's great.
Little did they know I dug the music as much or more than my son did. But today I imagine those same people see my son and I in line for a metal show, and they probably are saying to my son, "Is that your dad?" And probably commenting on how cool
dad?
It is that you'd be taking him out on an outing from the old folks' home. Anyway, thanks for letting me get nostalgic.
How old are you, Kurt Crawford? You can't be that old.
And hope you're enjoying happy hunting and fishing on your well-deserved vacation and wrap up the rest of the dog days. Stay frosty, my friend.
Right. Stay frosty, Kurt Crawford. Thank you for that great call. Call anytime, my friend. And Kurt Crawford, one of the most ardent supporters of the Rock and Roll Geek Show. He's the biggest value for value supporter of anybody. All right, I got another audio comment. Let's see who this is.
Michael Butler, Chris Capel, Rock and Roll Copywriter.
Hello, Chris.
I know you already have one of my other audio comments here, but I
can't get enough of Chris Capel's comments.
Just listen to Larry Burke's stellar.
Yes. Larry Burke got this whole thing started about first concerts that got you into rock and roll.
Two concerts from 1980, and that hit home for me because September 1980 was my first concert, and I think I have a pretty damn good 1-2 punch, too.
Oh, good.
If you want to go that way.
Yes.
So here we go.
Let's go.
September 1980. It was actually the same week John Bonham passed away. I went to my first concert at Madison Square Garden, New York, and with two older guys, and I was kind of the young tag-along. And it was Queen on the Game Tour.
Wait a minute, did I play this one already? I think I did. I did not play this, Chuck or Chris Capel. If I did, I apologize. Let me listen a little bit more.
And the opening band was the Johnny Van Zant
Yes,
Band.
I played this one. I'm sorry, but it's nice to hear from you again, Chris Capel. I'm out of it, friends. I apologize. All right. Thank you, Chris Capel. Call in again. All right, here's another one.
Testing, and I got it.
Oh, wait a second. How about this?
Hey, Butler, as you.
Oh, whoa, okay, hold on.
Hey, Butler, calling in to give you some Dog Day stuff.
Who is this?
This is Metal Dan.
Hey, Metal Dan.
How you doing?
I'm super great. Couldn't be better. Thanks for asking.
Super great. I'm having a nice iced tea.
I'm joining you with a Tecate.
You did say to call in, call you an asshole, give you anything, any topic. So that's what I'm doing.
Thank you.
It's great to hear from Casey the other day. That was awesome.
Yes.
That was good to have his update on Sonny, the shows he's going to, and basically giving you shit.
Yeah. I'm actually, Casey and I are working on a super secret project, and I'm in kind of like trying to write songs now. I haven't written songs in a while, and I'm kind of out of the game, but I came up with a really good one that I think is a pretty, well, I think it's pretty good, but and Casey thought it was good. So I got to write, I'm in songwriting mode, and so is Casey. So we're doing like a secret project together right now.
Some of the best, or one of the best Rock and Roll Geek shows was when Casey was the host, as you. Should do that again.
Casey?
That was fun.
Casey, did you hear that? You want a guest host again as Michael Butler?
It was, you got defensive about the Exodus stuff, though. So now you don't own two houses? Your wife owns them, whatever. That was
my son owns
them. That was something. So anyways, topic one, beer. You like beer.
Yes.
I sometimes drink beer. So I was in Oceanside the other day, and it was hot. And I had a Mexican beer on tap.
Uh-huh.
And it might have been the best Mexican beer on tap I've ever had.
Mexican beer is the beer to drink when it's a hot day. It's like, it's just super crisp and light and doesn't have that much alcohol. And it's, it's just good.
Carbonation in the beer. There was bubbles when I drank the beer. The beer was cold and it had the bubbles and it just went down so well. So why is it that some beers you get from a can, it doesn't have that? And then this beer on tap was like perfectly carbonated or something. Is that why you get that beer can thing that you have with the pump and it makes it? And that's why your beers are so good versus mine are just flat and boring? Or what's the deal?
Wait a minute. Beer can thing with a pump. Oh, you mean the growler thing? I don't know. I prefer my beer in the can, to be honest with you.
All right. So, second topic.
That was a question, okay.
Ice cream maker.
Yes.
So, I purchased an ice cream maker, $1,000. Mine was like $25.
Yeah. You ain't seen no ice cream maker like this one, man. This thing is a...
a long time ago.
Honestly, is it worth $1,000? Hell no, it's not. It makes fantastic ice cream, but come on, you got to buy a lot of ice cream before it starts, you know, paying for itself.
I found it way more expensive, and I know how good homemade ice cream is. I get that. But I found it way more expensive to buy the vanilla beans, the cream, the et cetera.
No, you can get a thing of cream for $4. And the vanilla, you just got to get vanilla extra. The vanilla beans are like $28. Yeah, it's not worth it, man. In all honesty, it ain't worth it.
Then just getting really good ice cream, which you can get really.
But Metal Dan, I don't know if you're married or not, but if your wife says, I want this, I mean, do you say no?
Ice cream from the store. I found it cheaper to actually buy a good carton than it was for me to go all buy the ingredients separately.
Yeah, and
it was way more expensive that way and so much trouble than to do that.
I agree.
Just saying, but I know.
I agree.
Your wife wanted it. Maybe she's going to go into the business of making ice cream for others
to
eat or sell or whatever.
Why go into business? She retired. She can take my money. Did I tell you the donations? Yeah, okay.
That's why you purchase one for $1,000versus
because I love my wife.
$25.
We used to have a $25 ice cream maker. That thing we never used it. Of course, this thing's new, so we're using it. I figured out the perfect ice cream recipe for this thing though. You use equal parts milk and sugar. So say you would use half a cup of milk and a half a cup of sugar, and then you use two parts cream. So if you used a half a cup of milk and a half a cup of sugar, you would use one cup of cream, and then whatever you want to flavor that's the basis for the good ice cream. And then you can add your, like, we made a mango ice cream the other day that was unbelievable. You puree mango, or you can puree some strawberries, or puree some peaches, whatever you want to add, or vanilla extract, whatever you want to add, as long as you have that core, the one part sugar, one part milk, and two parts cream. I'm telling you, man, it is some pretty damn good ice cream. But it's not worth $1,000.
That's my other thing. Ice cream, huh? So, yeah, as Casey pointed out, ice cream and beer, you're going to have a beer gut and a beer belly that won't go away.
Gonna?
So, keep working out.
Yeah.
Get out to the ocean and get some fish and do some rowing.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have the beer belly.
I already got
Welcome
it,
to the club, Butler.
I already got it,
That's
friend.
All I have.
All right. Thank you, Metal.
See ya.
Thank you. All right.
Stay frosty.
Stay frosty, friend, with the beer guts. All right. One more audio comment. I think this is from a Dog Days podcast. I'm starting to slur my words really bad.
Good morning, Michael Butler. Good to talk to you. It's Crazy Joe.
Now, did Crazy Joe fart before he talked? Let me rewind that. Listen closely.
Good.
Was that a fart? Crazy Joe. I'm guessing that was a seat squeaking. I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt and say that's a seat squeaking.
Good morning, Michael Butler. Good to talk to you. It's Crazy Joe.
Hey, Crazy Joe.
And here we are again in the Dog Days of Podcast.
Good morning.
And I got to tell you, man, and this comes from the heart, every year when we do these Dog Days of Podcasting, I really, really look forward to hearing your show.
Are you shitting
me? Foolishly, and I'm going to correct this. Foolishly, I don't listen to your show in the off season. I only listen in the dog days. And the reason for that is because of my musical tastes. And, I'm not so much a music guy. I'm not so much a rock guy as I am.
You don't have to be. You're missing that comedy gold. All right.
Movie guy. Movies are my primary interest. Yeah. But that's one of the things I love about your show is that your enthusiasm and your way of expressing yourself makes a subject matter that isn't my top interest very, very interesting. I love listening to you talk about bands that very often are bands I've never heard of.
Well, that's very nice of you to say.
It's delightful to listen to.
Delightful.
And your enthusiasm is infectious. And very often you play songs at the end of the show from bands I'm not familiar with. And I think this is really good. And I really, really enjoy it. So I'm going to have to subscribe. I'm going to subscribe.
There you go.
I'm going to be
Thank
listening
you,
to you all year round from now
that's
on.
Very nice.
Because
of you, Crazy Joe.
Your show's just terribly entertaining.
And by the way, I'm wearing pajamas. Well, no, not really. I'm wearing sweats.
And a lot of that's a testament to you. You are a great podcaster.
I'm great!
Because
I am fucking great!
For a podcaster to be able to take a subject matter that may be a niche subject that doesn't appeal to everyone and make it very, very interesting
Thank you, Crazy
to everybody.
Joe. Tell that to the people I try to get interviews with.
Even those who don't fall into that niche, that is a talent. And you have that talent, my friend.
I appreciate
So that. I'm going to be listening. You know,
Thank
like
you.
I said, I'm a movie guy more so than a music guy. And I feel like...
Okay, favorite movies. Top five movies of all time. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. This is Spinal Tap. Evil Dead 2, not 1. Evil Dead 2. Goodfellas and probably Godfather. Maybe not Godfather, even though that's one. I saw a great movie last night, man. Dog Day Afternoon. I've never seen that movie, but Al Pacino, wow, motherfucker, that cut guy acted in that movie. Dog Day Afternoon from 1975.
You and I, our musical tastes probably diverge quite a bit, especially when I hear the bands you talk about. There are a lot of bands I'm not familiar with, bands I don't listen to. My musical taste, you know, I'm 46 years old, grew up in the 80s, and my musical tastes tend to lean towards like 80s pop. Like that's the, you know, the stuff that makes me nostalgic.
The common thread between your music and mine is songs, friend.
From my youth. And then in the 90s, I did become a big fan of 90s punk rock, you know, your Bad Religions and
nothing wrong with
Rancids
that.
And
songs,
Nerf Herders,
songs,
you know,
songs.
That kind of stuff. So, So that's
the commonality in all those. They have good songs.
That's where my rock and roll tastes lie, is in the punk rock, particularly of that 90s era.
I grew up 80s punk, Circle Jerks, 70s punk too. 70s punk, Ramones, you know, all those. And 80s, Circle Jerks, Black Flag.
Working in college radio. My favorite band of all time is the Monkees. I don't know what your feelings are
songs,
on the Monkees. I know
songs, you go for songs. They had great songs
for a harder sound. So I'm not sure if the Monkees appeal to you.
This
has been a rough year for Monkees fans. We lost Michael Nesmith this year, which was heartbreaking to me. I met the guy on one occasion, and he couldn't have been nicer. Just a really, really sweet guy. I have a copy of the movie poster for their 1968 movie Head.
Yes,
that is autographed by three of them.
Oh,
unfortunately,
that's nice.
I didn't get to meet Davy Jones. I nearly met Davy Jones. I was at a convention. And Davy Jones was a guest at the convention, and I went up to his table to get him to sign this Head movie poster. He would have been the first one to sign it. Nobody had signed it. He would have been the first. And they told me he left for the day. He'll be back tomorrow.
Sorry,
and I didn't
Davy
go back
Jones
the next
left.
Day. I knew he was going to be at another con that summer, and I thought, well, I'm going to see him in June. I did not see him in June. He died before June. So if you get a chance to meet somebody, always take it.
Yeah.
But it has been signed by Mickey, Peter, and Mike. You know, you mentioned on one of the last shows, the caller was asking about, like, you know, your rock and roll souvenirs, like what memorabilia would you like to have? So I think for me, that is the bit of memorabilia I have that means the most to me, is that movie poster for the movie Head, autographed by Mickey Dolenz, Mike Nesmith, and Peter Tork. I just wish Davey had also signed it. So I guess I'll just sign off. I wanted to drop you an audio comment because I'm really enjoying your output.
Thank
and I know
you,
you've
Gracie
been asking
Joe,
for audio comments.
It.
But I know my musical tastes don't necessarily
Doesn't
fall
matter.
In the wheelhouse of the Rock and Roll Geek Show.
Hey.
So I don't want to derail the show. So I will bow out now, but, you know, man, keep doing what you're doing.
I don't know anybody who doesn't like the Monkees. Do you?
You're doing a great show. I always hear you tell people, you know, that if they're in, you know, San Francisco, you know, look you up.
That's
so
right.
So I will offer the same invitation to you. If you find yourself in the Philadelphia area, drop me an email.
I will.
I'd love to
I
take
will,
you out to dinner or something
I
if
will,
you're in the Philadelphia
Joe.
Area. And by the way, that goes to all of our podcasting crew in the Dog Days of Podcasting.
Yes.
Any one of you, if you happen to find yourself in the Philadelphia area, contact me. So, all right, Crazy Joe signing off. Keep wearing those pajamas and keep up the great work.
All right, thank you, Crazy Joe. I appreciate it, friend. Yeah, that wasn't a fart. That was his chair squeaking like mine is. No, I can't get mine to squeak. But all right, thank you for those audio comments. I will talk to you tomorrow. From Miami, if all goes as planned, and I don't have any song queued up. So let's actually spin it now. We'll spin the, what do you call it? The iTunes wheel. How do you spin the wheel here on the, I do it usually on the, I'll spin the wheel on my phone. That's easy for me to do. All right, pull up my library songs and hit shuffle. What's the first one that comes up? Come, please be a good one. Please be a good. Oh yeah. All right. Came up with T-Rex Ballrooms of Mars. I like that one. That was a good one. Let me see. Ballrooms. Now I'm pulling it up on my phone. Okay, from the slider, T-Rex, Ballrooms of Mars. Thank you for listening, friends. I'll talk to you tomorrow, hopefully from Miami, Florida. Thank you for everybody who called in on this episode. Please keep the audio comments coming. I apologize for being a little bit buzzed. Record it into your phone or whatever and send the MP3 to rockandrollgeek@gmail.com. You can find the show at rockandrollgeek.com. Dogdaysofpodcasting.com is where you can find Crazy Joe's podcast and everybody else who's doing the Dog Days episodes. Tim, the Rock and Roll Runner, everybody else. I haven't even started packing for tomorrow. We got the plane leaves at 7:50, and we got to be up super early because our ride, Brian's giving us a ride, and he's got to leave by 5:30 a.m. So we got to be up super early. So I got to get out of here and go pack. Rockandrollgeek.com, Facebook R&R Geek, Twitter R&R Geek, Instagram Rockandroll Geek. Don't ask. I'll talk to you tomorrow from Miami. If you don't hear from me, you better check the status of plane crashes. Because, let's not even talk about that. All right, I'll talk to you tomorrow, friends. Ballrooms of Mars from T-Rex. What happened to it? Okay, ballrooms. Oh, fucking hell. You got to be kidding me. Let me try this again. Mars. Okay. Ballrooms of Mars. Here we go. Fuck.
You're gonna look fine in private dancing. You're gonna trip and glide out on a trampoline plane. Your diamond hands will be stacked with roses and cars and people of the past. I'll call you thing just when the moon sings. And place your face in stone upon a star. Anchored in the arms of the changeless man. We'll dance our lives away in the ballrooms of Mars. You talk about day, I'm talking about nighttime. When monsters call out the names of men, Bob Dylan knows, and I bet Alan Freed. There are things in night that are better not to behold. You dance with your lizard leather boots on, and pull the strings that change the faces of men. You diamond proud hag, you are gutted con gangster. John Lennon knows your name, and I've seen his. Rock!
It's a rock and roll geek train wreck.